welcome to the Pride of Detroit PODcast. POD stands for Pride of Detroit. It's the first three letters in podcast. Hence, we call it the Pride of Detroit PODcast. You know this, our damn dirty secret now. I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. Running duo here with my man here, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. Jeremy Reisman, our fearless leader, is on the road. He wanted to maybe check in from a hotel, but I've tried doing that before. It's no good. It's no good at all. So it's just you and me, Ryan.
I think the only time that the Wi-Fi in a hotel has ever worked well when it was international.
Yeah.
And I was in and I was in Punta Cana.
No, well, we had other issues that night with you in Punta Cana, but I would agree, like, hotel Wi-Fi in America is where it's just awful. Just I don't know what it is about it, but I've never really, even in some of the upscales ones, just the Wi-Fi there is just
haven't been very good. No. But also, Chris, you mentioned too that Jeremy was on the road. Where is he on the road to?
I think you know where that is.
I think if he listens to this tomorrow, like if I can just see Jeremy getting in a car, turning this on, and within the first 5 minutes, we're already talking about W-R-E-S-T-L-I-N-G, and he would be very, very upset.
Bingo. What's its name? Oh, hey. He would be mad.
Red matted.
What if we did spend this podcast just talking about pro wrestling? We're not going to do that. Mostly because I haven't been watching in a while.
I mean, I think that what I would say to that is, have you heard that Pride of Detroit is hiring? I mean, they might be hiring two more people on top of that. I think that's what might happen.
It's very true. It's very, very true. Except you and I both know where he keeps all the skeletons.
Yes.
We'll show up for the Senate inquiry. We'll show up for the Senate inquiry and we'll be the star witness.
I'll have to sit on like three couch cushions like Zuckerberg.
Jeez. You won't make the fish eyes, at least I hope. All right, let's talk about some Lions stuff on that note. So we just got done. We were writing up some notes from the day, kind of putting out our fishnet out there to trawl in all of the Lions news of the day. And I wanted to talk about one that caught your interest, which was Gil Brandt, senior NFL analyst. And I mean, Gil's been pretty good to the Lions, I would say, in past years, has he not? He's usually really excited about Bob Quinn and the front office and all these things. But he was out there ranking his top, I believe, 35, 36 receivers of all time, throughout all of NFL history. And Calvin Johnson comes in at number 18.
Is Gil being good right now or not?
I mean, that's always the thing, right? Is it only good if your guy is getting the pump? Because similar, I don't think this is too many people arguing too much, because like there's some guys ahead of him that it's like, okay, the main question is, is Calvin Johnson a top 10 all wide receiver? And depending on your criteria, you've got several things in play here. One is that he just didn't play that much at the end of the day. Like he played quite a few games, but fairly short for what it is. But granted, there's also some guys on here who used to be old timey in the league who probably played even fewer years. But and then there's some guys in front of him, like I mean, I don't know. Andre Johnson is 16, Calvin Johnson's 18, Paul Warfield, James Lofton, Tim Brown, obviously, like Chris Carter, I believe, is number 10. So it's all a matter of where you put some of these guys. I don't think it really gets completely defined in his list until about like 8 or 9, when he starts getting into name redacted and Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I think, Chris, what is the most difficult thing, and if Jeremy was here, he'd be happy that I'd be channeling his spirit, but like it's really hard, I think, to compare like era to era, because if you look at, I mean, if you're basing it off of statistics, some of these guys that are included on this list in front of Calvin Johnson, like how could you even say that they belong on this list ahead of him? But at the same time, the forward pass wasn't what it is today in today's NFL. Like Tom Fears, for example, number 17 on the list. played from 1948 to 1956. He had, you know, just a shade under 5,400 yards and 38 touchdowns. How are you going to even compare that to a guy, you know, Calvin Johnson holds a single season receiving record with, you know, 1,964 yards in one season alone. So it's difficult to compare era to era, but there are some guys I think that are on this list that are from the Calvin Johnson, you know, era, so to speak, that I don't think should be ahead of him. I don't think Andre Johnson should be ahead of him. I think Larry Fitzgerald is a really good measuring stick for almost anybody. I think that comes back to the idea of, you know, durability and just doing it for so long. Like Larry Fitzgerald definitely has that checked off in his column, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, it's fascinating because like I'm with you. I always think the next generation is always the freakish athletes is just always better. That's always why I'm going to have LeBron over Jordan. If you ask me that question, I don't care about how many rings LeBron, if he caught Jordan in his prime, would just beat him like a redheaded stepchild just on how physical and just well-trained he is versus Jordan, who just does not get that same kind of athletic performance and endurance out of his trainers, whatever. I mean, maybe if you gave Jordan the same regimen, maybe, I don't know. I really don't know, but these kind of generational things happen. But at the same time too, I do know the NFL is very much so a league that is very forgetful of its past. More so than, say, like baseball. Like, if this was in baseball, we'd be able to make better comparisons, I believe.
But I think so. Yeah.
But this kind of brings me to something else that was happening, too, because we had this just, what, over the weekend, right? You were in the midst of it about the NFL Mount Rushmore and how Cowboys fans were mad.
Yeah, Cowboys fans just typically always mad when Barry Sanders gets the rub in favor of, you know, their boy Emmett Smith.
I don't even know what the argument is for Emmett Smith, to be honest.
I think the argument is hashtag running back wins, and also just the fact that he, you know, held on until his very last finger slipped from the cliff playing for the Arizona Cardinals, mm-hmm. So that he could break Walter Payton's record. I don't find any true value in that. Like, I don't look at that and say, you know what? I really appreciated that I got to see Emmett Smith, you know, on his last leg, churning out like, you know, 3 yards a carry for the Arizona Cardinals so that he could best a record.
Yeah, this is longevity versus art going on here. Same thing, I think, with when you're arguing about where Calvin Johnson belongs on here versus some of these other guys. It's a matter of, because when it comes to Barry Sanders, like when he cut a lane the way he did, that right there is what I think a lot of Lions fans would say. Yeah, that puts him above Emmett Smith.
Yeah, I hate to be the eye test guy, but I can't think of all of the runs that I've seen where I've seen Emmett Smith get a football and run with it that impressed me that much more than what Barry Sanders was able to do. Sure. But I mean, going back to what I said about, you know, holding on too long, it's different though. Like with like a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, who's still like incredibly effective and efficient as the receiver he is right now. It's just different. Like holding on too long, like, you know, Emmett Smith, by the time got 34, 35 years old when he played with the Cardinals, he averaged 2.8 yards per carry and then 3.5 yards per carry in his final season. Like who's signing up to like watch that and remember that and be like, remember Cardinals great Emmett Smith?
Yeah. I mean, Brett Favre was doing that too at the end too, right? Talking about the great Minnesota Viking Brett Favre.
Yeah. The thing I appreciated the most, I think, from the NFL.com Mount Rushmore is they asked Jalen Ramsey who is on his Mount Rushmore, and he said, "My Mount Rushmore is me with four different expressions."
that's the answer I want. That is good. Yeah, and meanwhile, I'm looking at the bottom of Gilbrand's list, and like he's got Odell Beckham Jr. above John Stallworth and Fred Biletnikoff and Lynn Swan. Like, and we're talking about history here. Those three, like, that's history to me. And Odell is great, and he puts out some. That's where my adherence to athleticism is starting to really wither there. So, but funny enough, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that when I'm looking at Calvin Johnson. I'm just wondering, is that maybe a fan thing? Because we really grapple with this all the time, because I think at the end of the day, you want your sports journalism to be, I mean, your commentary and your journalism to be opinionated. You want it to be truthful, but how much of the time does that just fandom tends to just get in the way of those things? I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I don't know, people don't think I'm a fan. I am a fan. I root for this team, but just you try to say something that isn't to a hive mind and it just everything just starts to get murky and accusations come out. And yeah, here we are. We started the first 10 minutes of this podcast defending Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson over Chris Carter and Emmett Smith.
Sure. Yeah. And I think there's definitely something to be said for that. You know, the fact that I am a Detroit Lions fan probably has me wanting to champion Barry Sanders more than Emmett Smith. Cause I think that there's something also to be said that you do want your sports reporting to be, flavored and opinionated. At the same time, I think a lot of people, they also crave for it's that fine line between that and objectivity and looking towards statistics and things like that. Calvin are just two very unique cases, aren't they though? Just because they both retired like at or very near their prime.
Yeah. And I think the years have been, I mean, the years have absolutely been kinder to Barry Sanders. He's had more of them. I don't know if it's going to be the same way with Calvin Johnson. We're speaking of how bad the NFL is with history. It feels like we're even worse with the players from the 2000s right now, maybe because they haven't faded into history yet, but it just, I don't know. It feels like you're kind of dealing with some generational issues when it comes to talking about the history of some of these players, maybe because those who grew up with like Calvin Johnson haven't really, you know, taken those positions of roles where they're speaking from an authority that would lend it to create a legend, like say Barry Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the one other thing about Gilbrandt's list, Antonio Brown, number 5.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Antonio Brown at number 5.
Are you kidding me? Come on, man.
Yeah, ahead of the likes of Terrell Owens, you know, some other names we mentioned, Larry Fitzgerald, number 8, name redacted.
Name absolutely redacted, yeah. Please. I wouldn't put him above T.O. That's T.O., people really sleep on how good T.O. was.
T.O. was very good. T.O. is 40. He's, how old is he? I think is he 40 years old and he can still run like a 4.44 40?
Something like that. He's a freak. It's, like, I would, mine would probably go like Rice, Moss, T.O. for my top three. But, and then I'd have to get in some like someone historic or something maybe, but those have to be my top three, and I will not take any prisoners.
Randy Moss, very good. Very good as well. Number 3 on the list. Don Hutson, number 2. Do you have a problem with Jerry Rice being number 1 or no?
No. No. Because like I get the arguments between Moss and Rice, but Rice, I get it. He played for a lot of teams who are like really good, and he got to win quite a bit. But he was also insanely good. Yeah, I don't know. I think the difference is when we start talking about Moss versus Rice, we start to get into the rings business a bit too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I just decide to step off. Thankfully, this isn't the kind of just dumpster fire we do when it comes to quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, that tends to be a little bit much too, but I love Moss.
Ever try talking to someone about Montana versus Brady, especially if you get an old head who's like really into Joe Montana?
Is the Montana versus Brady argument a lot like the Jordan versus LeBron argument?
But it doesn't. I don't think it has as much power as the Jordan versus LeBron one, because I think time has faded Montana a bit. And there's a bit of generational divide. Plus, it's harder. Like, Brady's a lot closer to Montana when it comes to rings as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I think that just kind of NBA Twitter serves that up a little bit more. And like you said, Montana's like faded a little bit.
Well, Montana's got like, what, 4 and Brady, I mean, no, Montana's got 6, Brady has 4, versus where you would be with Jordan and LeBron, you'd have 6 versus 3, and LeBron moving now to 3 different teams in his career.
Yeah, I just think it's really easy with Montana with the 4 Super Bowls and not losing any.
Yeah.
And Jordan, and Jordan winning 6 and not losing any, but then Brady and LeBron kind of being a little bit imperfect, even though Brady does have a winning record in Super Bowls. So,
yeah, and I think again just the stats speak for themselves when it comes to Brady, but I don't know. I'm willing to hear Montana arguments because, again, my thesis is we are all just very forgetful in the NFL of history. And part of that is that just when history comes out in the NFL, it always comes out and like the men were tougher back then or something like that. It's never about a particular like type of play that was brilliant, that the likes of which will never be seen again, unless it's in very remote cases. And as we've been talking about here, Sanders and Calvin Johnson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All great right. points.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'd make them sometimes. Let's take a quick break. Do you want to do ListCast or do you want to do Wayback first? We're doing pass rushers this week for ListCast. So
how about we jump right into ListCast? Give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want. All right, we'll be right back. ListCast coming up, top 10 pass rushers. Just me and Ryan today on this crazy train we call the Pride of Detroit POD cast.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
All right, let's start our ListCast. ListCast music. It's back, baby. We are continuing on our positional ListCast of the summer because we are bored. We have little else to do. We like to talk about the Detroit Lions just fine, but sometimes we like to talk about the top 10 edge rushers of 2018 and who they are going to be. We like to see sometimes if a Lion makes their way onto the list. However, I will say today that Sporting News did list Ezekiel Ansah's franchise tag as the worst contract on the books for the Detroit Lions. So real quick before we dive into the ListCast, your thoughts on that?
I don't know if I completely agree with it. I mean, from a raw like money standpoint, sure. Like he's definitely overpaid because I don't view Ezekiel Ansah as a top 5. I mean, no spoiler for my ListCast, but I don't view him as a top 5 defensive end in football. At the same time, though, I think the article kind of mentions that if the Lions don't get a deal done, then they'll really regret paying Ezekiel Ansah what they're paying him for 1 year. And I disagree with that because I think they're in this moment where they kind of just needed like a stopgap. They want to kind of put Ansah on like a prove me type contract. If he ends up playing out of his mind and if he ends up having an incredible season, something that compares to his 2015 season, then good for him. Like go ahead and take your statistics and head to free agency and get paid by the Miami Dolphins or, you know,
but that doesn't
any
serve
other,
the, Lions
the Buffalo Bills,
though, right? It doesn't serve the Lions.
It doesn't, but I think what it would serve though, is if he does have a good season this year, I think that would really help the Lions. And I think that's what they want him to do. And I mean, personally, I don't think that he's worth the type of money if he can prove to be healthy just one season because he's dealt with so many injury problems in the past. And they're also in this very transitional moment, too. Wouldn't you agree with hiring Matt Patricia? We're not really too sure, mm-hmm. like, exactly, like, what he needs out of his defensive ends or how much he values them, how much they should be spending on that positionally. I mean, what was your thoughts on Ansah and the contract?
Here's the thing is I kind of agree with it, if only because I get what you're saying about the prove me deal, but in my mind this defense right now is still there's nothing that a single outstanding year of play from Ezekiel Ansah will fix about the underlying problems that are plaguing the front 7 of this Detroit Lions team, no matter how much it gets shifted up. It's going to have to take something out of the park to make this front 7 a stable defense come time for the NFL season. And I still believe it's going to be the Achilles heel of this team. And the question you have to ask me then is, does Ezekiel Ansah fix that? Well, no, because they want to switch to a 3-4 base and they want to put more emphasis on the linebackers. And I don't know, man. There's not a lot here for me to like about this front seven. And I'm not going to spoil some mailbag questions we have, but we did get some questions about position groups. And I look at this Lions defense and I just think, okay, this is where it's going to be the rough year. This is people, I don't think Lions fans realize like how bad this defense was, and they just assume Patricia will come in and fix it right out of the gate. And I just don't see it that way. I don't believe that to be the case. I think that to be magical thinking. And if they do turn it around in a massive, Rams-esque turnaround, then great, fantastic, wonderful. But I you can't get me to go to Vegas and put money on that.
I wouldn't recommend doing so either.
You know a lot about Vegas.
I know a little bit enough that I just kind of want to get on a plane and go there right now.
Well, once Michigan passes sports gambling, you won't need to.
That's a very good point.
All right, let's talk about list casting then. We're 4 minutes in. We've kind of burned enough time since we don't have Jeremy here. So let's go through our bottom five real quick. We'll rotate 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, and then we'll do our top five. So are you ready or should I go first?
Yeah, go ahead. You kick it off, the master of ceremony.
I will kick it up. Number 10 for me is Terrell Suggs, who is, in my mind, still probably... He's up there in age, but old man strong as always. And I believe that in a pass rush, so this is pass rush. There's going to be linebackers on here too. And I believe he's the one that keeps the Baltimore Ravens from sliding into just oblivion right now in my mind. Number 9 on my list, I have Calais Campbell, defensive end for the Jaguars. He is insanely disruptive. He's only ever had one season of double-digit sacks, but, I mean, man, you just look at what the Jaguars do, and he's a big part of that. He's good. Number eight on my list is another Jaguars defensive end, Yannick Nega. I can't say his name, man. Yannick Ngakoue? Ngakoue? Yeah.
Sure.
He's good. Really, 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 really good. Number 8, and I don't know if he might be higher on for you, but J.J. Watt. Maybe I'm getting into
really
Andrew. I think we're getting into Andrew Luck territory with J.J. Watt, which is, hey, do you? We're kind of he's 8 on my list, banking on the idea that he plays and that he comes back and he still looks a little bit like J.J. Watt.
That's enough.
All right, let's get yours.
Hey, similarly enough, I have T Sizzle. I have Terrell Suggs at number 10. Man, how just impressive has his entire career been? Last 35. Yeah, 35. And last year, he was second in the NFL among edge defenders in QB hurries with 57. So he's still just the man. Number 9 on my list is Myles Garrett. Admittedly, like he dealt with some injuries. What I thought was really unfair though, NFL.com, they have their own Snapchat account and they rated him as the worst number one pick of all time.
Why? Because he got hurt? Come on.
Because he had a down season. I couldn't believe it. I have receipts. I have it screenshot on my phone. So I have receipts for when NFL.com eats their words because I Myles Garrett will, I think he'll
he's
have
gonna
a great
go up. Yeah, I'm with you. He's going to go up.
Yeah. So I got Garrett number 9. I have Jadeveon Clowney number 8.
Oh, God. There's another name I forgot the Texans had.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, what a career arc for him, too, right? Like to go from basically the guy who, basically took the last year of his college season off.
That went so weird because, and I totally get why he took that year off too, because there was that quarterback for South Carolina whose name's not on the top of my head right now, but he got hurt so bad he just could not play football again.
The running back Lattimore.
Yeah, Marcus Lattimore. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
you're dealing with that in your background, and you just pancaked Vince Smith from Michigan, and probably the most impressive college defensive play of the past 20 years.
Really.
And yeah, man, you're gonna make big money. Take the year.
Sure. So just a weird career arc for him, with, you know, trying not to get injured, ends up getting injured, comes back, and he's just proving that he's an incredible football player.
He's a freak
next
athlete.
On my list, number seven, Calais Campbell.
I think you jumped. Go right ahead. You're into seven. Yeah, no, it's fine. Do seven and six, and then I'll do my seven and six.
Okay, sure. So yeah, Calais Campbell, number seven. What a story with just, you know, one play. And I know it took the kind of like the step up from, you know, Jalen Ramsey, adding AJ Bouye, and the other defensive lineman, Yannick, getting some higher level play from those guys. But then they throw in Calais Campbell on Jacksonville, and he completely just bolsters their defense and turns them into, you know, one of the best defenses in the league. He's great. He's incredible.
The last decade or so, I would say, just such a good defense.
And they have every right to be just as good, if not better, this upcoming season too. So I think that'll be really cool.
Funny enough that we're looking at them and wondering what they're going to do with quarterback.
Well, they gave Bortles money, so we'll see how that goes. Bortles. Number six, they like Bortles. Number six, JJ Watt. If he comes back and if he gets hurt again, then
you think he's done?
Huge bummer. I don't know why you keep on playing football. One of the greatest ability in sports is availability. And if you're not on the field, then what are you doing for me? So
yeah, I'm there with you.
I want to give him the benefit of the doubt just because he might be legitimately one of the best defenders in NFL history. But I need you on the field, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I put him in number six. So who do you got at seven?
Number seven for me is Melvin Ingram. I admit I did not pay a lot of attention to the Chargers last year. So going back through the stats, going back through the logs, seeing so many good Chargers players out there, I was like, oh, wow. They were the Rams. Definitely. This is the problem with them being in LA now next to the Rams, because the Rams sucked up all the news and all the energy. So when the Chargers did get good last year, no one noticed. And yeah, right. I think I've mentioned a few other Chargers players on previous list cast. Melvin Ingram playing opposite Joey Bosa, like, yeah, he's good.
Very good.
So I mean, last three he's averaged almost 10 sacks a season the last three seasons.
And the thing was too, with him this offseason, he was a free agent. He ended up getting that contract from the Chargers, and I think that to keep Ingram with Bosa and kind of let's just see how that ends up working itself out. I think that was smart on them to go ahead and pay him.
Yeah. So we're getting up there, and I'm realizing like this is where, see, I really want to put Cameron Wake on this thing, but maybe because I put Suggs on, I only want one old man. My number six is Chandler Jones. Not much else to say. He led the league in sacks last year, 17 sacks. He's going into his seventh season. He's in his prime, and he's looking really good.
Yeah, on an otherwise pretty bad Cardinals defense.
Yeah. Just he's that bright spot. There's quite a few guys like that. All right, we might as well do our top five. So why don't you do five, four, and three for me?
Okay. Number five, I have Melvin Ingram. You just spoke on him a little bit. He was number six on Pro Football Focus for edge defenders, behind a couple of other guys that I have up higher on this list. But talked about him a little bit. I love the idea of keeping him with Bosa and seeing if maybe you can, just be healthy. That's been the Chargers' biggest problem, right? Is that they always just get bit by the injury bug. So as long as they can stay healthy, I think that'll be really interesting.
They don't have more. They don't have many more years of their quarterback either. And I think once it's getting hot here. I have the fans off.
Philip Rivers, baby.
Philip Rivers. Thank you. Bolo tie. Sorry, my brain is heating up. Bolo Tai there, once he goes off riding off into the sunset with his hordes of children, I don't know what the Chargers are going to do.
We'll see what they do. And then my number four is the New Orleans Saints, Cameron Jordan. He was actually number one, according to Pro Football Focus last year among edge defenders. Just a great pass rusher, a superb run defender, kind of does a little bit of everything for you. He had a good season. If you want to talk about just raw statistics, you know, 14 quarterback sacks, 47 quarterback hurries, 10 batted passes, which was number one among all edge defenders. We love batted passes. We love Ace Watt Robinson. So how can I not love Cameron Jordan? Different players, but albeit all things considered, he was like a big force on that New Orleans defense. So like Cameron Jordan. And then number three, Von Miller. Von Miller, number three. I have two guys ahead of him who, as always with most other list casts that we've done so far, these guys are, it's just like picking your flavor of who you like. I don't think that there's a whole lot like skill wise that, you know, differentiates these players from one another. But Von Miller, man, it's hard to argue against him. I mean, probably by his standards had a little bit of a down year, that Denver defense kind of took a hit. We'll see how they do next year. You know, no Aqib Talib, but 10 sacks last year, 12 quarterback hits. But he's always just in the backfield. He was actually first among all edge defenders with 61 quarterback hurries. So Von Miller, man, really good.
I like him. Number five for me. Let's see. I left off on Chandler Jones, right?
You did.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Sometimes I forget these things. Cooked brain and everything. Number five for me is, we haven't named him yet, Everson Griffin.
Yeah,
defensive end for the Vikings. Once again, I think Lions fans, you just got to keep watching out for the Vikings, man. He had 10 sacks in 8 games last year before he had that torn plantar fasciitis. And honestly, if he had been healthy all season, I probably would have had him maybe even higher on my list right now.
Mm-hmm.
He scares me. He scares me. He's going to try to eat Matt Stafford this year, and I'm not ready for it. Number four for me is Cameron Jordan. I think you summed it up pretty well. It's amazing that each time we go through this, we keep thinking of the Saints as an offensive team, and we keep naming a bunch of defensive players they have as well. I think they're probably going to be a team to beat in the NFC South.
Totally.
I mean, this is kind of the Drew Brees swan song, but man, what a song to go out on if this is it.
I mean, they were a missed tackle away from going to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, pretty much. It amazes me that Drew Brees, a guy who just never had the measurables, like, A, has been that good that long, and B, they've been able to build that kind of a team around him. Especially in a snake-bitten, like, historically, the New Orleans Saints, historically, which is probably one of the worst franchises in the league.
Oh,
there's a lot of competition for it.
Yeah.
New Orleans is right up there. It was one of the most pathetic organizations in all of the NFL.
I mean, before Breeze rides into town, right? Like, I mean, you're talking about the New Orleans Saints in the same breath as the Detroit Lions in terms of NFL franchises. Yeah,
or like old school Tampa Bay Buccaneers or something. Like, just one of those teams that just people forget. People wonder why pro football never took off in the South. That's because they got fed teams like the Bucs and the Saints and the Falcons.
There are shining moments where Archie Manning and Mike Ditka trading their entire draft for Ricky Williams.
Number three for me, and I don't think you've named him yet, and I dread what's coming up on your top two, Khalil Mack.
Ooh, okay. All right. Fair enough.
My God. I don't know what else to say. I'm worried about what Gruden's going to do in Oakland, Las Vegas, but sorry, I'm off in here. What do you have to say, or is he on your list?
Oh, he's on my list. Just don't mess this up, Gruden.
Don't mess. Yeah, exactly. Like, we're all looking at Oakland going to be Vegas and be like, please don't screw this up. It's too fun. Why don't you go ahead with your top two? Because I feel like you're about to jump into Khalil Mack somewhere.
That I most certainly am. Number two, though, before we get to Khalil Mack, spoilers here. Number two, I have Joey Bosa.
What? Wow.
Joey Bosa. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big Joey Bosa guy. I think that this upcoming season, like that AFC West, I'm going to say that it might be the Chargers to lose. I know that the Chiefs, you know, they're primed and they're ready. They're going to go with Patrick Mahomes and they have the weapons on offense and everything. But holy moly, man, like if the Chargers can just stay healthy, and I know that's such a hard thing to do in the NFL. But when you have a pass rush and you have two guys on your defensive line, like I think the only two other guys that I'd rather not see more than Ingram and Bosa lined up across from me would obviously be what the Rams have in Sue and Donald. But what my about goodness,
Campbell and Ngakoue.
There are a lot of good defensive lines in the NFL. The Lions do not have one of them. So that's the cliff notes of that discussion. But Bosa last year, I mean, 13 sacks, 51 quarterback hurries. That was good for seventh among all edge defenders. Also, though, really like just a solid player in terms of not only his like pass rushing skills, but even against the ground game, like a solid run defender. But man, a pass rushing specialist through and through. And then number one is Khalil Mack. He's incredible. Like I don't want to put anybody above him on this list because I love everything about him. His name is great. Like Khalil Mack might be one of the best names in all of the league.
Mack.
Just great. Just absolutely great.
Return of the Mack.
I guess I'll just say his stats. I mean, he only, you know, 11 sacks, 13 quarterback hits, 55 quarterback hurries, 55 tackles. That was good amongst all. That was best amongst all edge defenders. Just 53 stops. That was also tops amongst edge defenders, and stops are solo defensive tackles made. So 53 cleanups by his own some, and he had 55 tackles. So Khalil Mack, just a guy on that Oakland Raiders defense that, you know, even though they had a down year last year, was still just kicking ass and taking names.
Absolutely. All right. Number two for me is Von Miller. I think you summed it up pretty well. Freak, 83 sacks in 7 years, and really good. And I think we've been forgetting about the Broncos quite a bit because they have been that great. And I mean, he's going to have Bradley Chubb alongside him now too. He's just going to have all sorts of goodness opened up for him just to run like a marauder through the backfield. And he's in Old Spice commercials, so.
And he raises chickens.
And he raises chickens. Like, the guy does everything. I love him. Number one, and this, you know what? From now on, we're going to have to do this as pass rusher because we used to do edge rushers before, and now that we're at pass rushers, I love this because my number one didn't even appear on your list. And I think it might have been either an oversight of you or maybe we didn't define pass rusher that well. But number one for me is Aaron Donald.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. Like, that... If we're doing like interior defenders, obviously he's number one with a bullet.
Yeah.
Like,
okay. So you were doing like linebackers and defensive end. Okay.
Yeah. Like I was strictly trying to stay to like, you know, either like 3-4 outside linebackers or defensive ends, like those types of guys. Let it be known before you get into why Aaron Donald's great is that Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in football. And he's probably going to go down as maybe like one of the, you know, 10 greatest players in NFL history.
And Lions fans will forever chaw at the bit for missing out on him. But you know what? As much as I hate that the Lions missed out on him, a lot of teams did. But I mean, do you think, given the contract situation we've seen with Aaron Donald, on a team that's on the up and up like the Rams, do you actually believe, sitting here thinking, that he would still be with the Lions today?
I would hope so, man. I would really hope they would.
But that's my point. But that's my point, though, is like, yeah, you don't know. And I don't think that would be the case. I think just given how this team has kind of gone up and down, yeah, maybe they do better with Aaron Donald versus Eric Ebron. But I don't think he takes that contract to return to town. I think he goes to free agency.
I mean, check this out, though. The 2014 NFL draft where Donald was taken, 13th overall. The number one pick that year was Jadeveon Clowney. The number five pick was Khalil Mack. Later on in that draft, another guy that wasn't on either of our lists, but he was a guy I was considering there at like the 10-9 spot was DeMarcus Lawrence from the Dallas Cowboys. Just a lot of good edge defenders in that draft. And
so, so my number one problem was on me because I went interior. So I shouldn't have done that, but we will fix that up for next.
You know what?
He's
a pass rusher.
Sure.
Does he rush the passer? Absolutely he does. Absolutely. So you know what, Chris? This is just an instance of you being adequate. But I would say better than adequate.
Because I was thinking outside. Yeah, I was thinking around, thinking hard, trying to make the plays, looking all over. But I did tell you before we started, I meant primarily at defensive end and linebackers. So that was on me. That was me being adequate.
Just very on brand.
Yep. All right, let's take that quick break. ListCast is done. It's time for the Wayback Machine. I like that we're doing this right now because it is now starting. Let me tell you something. Over the weekend, it was insanely hot here in Los Angeles, the city that Jeremy is now escaping. I slept in like 85 degree weather in my apartment, inside in my apartment. And I've had the AC off now for about an hour as we are doing this podcast. And I'm starting to really get delirious now, which is perfect because now we are jumping into the way back for November 6th, Detroit Lions 30, Green Bay Packers 17. As the Lions finally get a win back and go back to 500, break the three-game losing skid, and beat up on a Packers team in Lambeau, I will add, mind you, but just mercilessly beat up on a team without Aaron Rodgers. And I guess my question to you before we dive into the statistics was, were even without Aaron Rodgers, with Brett Hundley in the backfield, were you expecting a game in Lambeau Field, mind you, in that house of horrors, where the Lions don't allow the Packers into the end zone, I believe with like less than 10 minutes left in the game?
Yeah, there was that cheapie that they scored.
Yeah, the one it was like a QB sneak with that the 1 yard line. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You say all of those things. You say the Aaron Rodgers injury, you say Brett Hundley in there. The Packers are clearly just not the team that everybody thought they were gonna be at this point in the season without their franchise starting quarterback. But then you say that one thing, that three word phrase in Lambeau Field, and that just throws everything through the ringer, right? Like as confident as I think a lot of people were about going into this game and getting a win, I think that people were also, they're just scared to death of that house of horrors.
Dude, we were smelling the juju. We're like, what if Brett Hundley has a game like Matt Flynn game? Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, it's also this is another thing. It's also incredibly hard to just ignore history. The Lions had lost 23 consecutive road games in Lambeau from 92 to 2014. So like you can't just erase 23 years of your life of being, just entirely petrified of going into the stadium and trying to come out with a W.
Yeah. Well, I think what Aaron Rodgers' injury did to the Packers just revealed just how much of a house of cards it is without their quarterback. Could you imagine what the Packers would be if they had that much better team around Aaron Rodgers?
Much better, because Aaron Rodgers is probably the greatest quarterback of all time.
We're going to do this now. The Rodgers, that's gonna be the next thing. It's not gonna be Montana versus Brady, it's gonna be Rodgers versus Brady. That's gonna be the Marino Montana of this generation, except Rodgers actually got a ring.
And I think wouldn't Rodgers be pretty analogous to LeBron though, just because like he's always been like the guy? Like, I mean, there was the 2 years ago when it was Rodgers and no receivers, Jordy Nelson was hurt, it was a cast of just it was just a cast of wash-offs.
Yeah.
And it was Aaron Rodgers dragging their corpse to the NFC Championship game.
I think so, but I like my Marino Montana comparison a lot better, though, just because it works. It just works because Marino Montana was in those same generation and had that, because Marino was in that boat too with the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
but yeah, on this game, just I don't know what in your mind stood out the most for the Detroit Lions here. Stafford put up like 360 yards. As I said, the defense held them to just 3 points until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think what stood out the most was that it was a decisive victory. You know, I think that this game was never really ever in doubt for Detroit. They were just, it just seemed like the Lions were in control from start to finish. Even though this was the game too where the Packers did score that touchdown in the fourth quarter, and Gruden, he made that remark about, "Oh, we got a ball game on our hands," and it's like, it's a wash.
There's it's 9:50 to go, Gruden, and they're down by, what was the score at the time? 10 to 30 or something like that.
Yeah, the game was almost completely out of hand.
Gruden was just trying to sell that game. It was 20 at that point.
Yeah. It was two scores and the Packers just couldn't move the ball.
Yeah.
So yeah. Though the Lions run defense looked pretty good. They, you know, held them to 78 yards total on 17 carries. All things considered, I think that, you know, we thought that was probably a victory because in the sense that it didn't seem like, especially with the way that the Lions secondary was playing, that the Packers would want to build a game plan around Brett Hundley throwing the football. It seemed like that they were going to try to, you know, they had some momentum with Aaron Jones, Ty Montgomery, trying to run the football, trying to, you know, do something on the ground. With the Lions being able to hold them to only 78 yards, I think that was really, what gave Lions fans some promise and some hope. Because if I can just reference this one last part from Jeremy Reisman's game recap, it says Detroit now sits at 4-4, a full two games behind the Vikings, but closing in. The Lions are currently 2-0 in the division, and if they keep up that record in the NFC North, they could very well be competing for the division crown in December.
Jeremy, when will you learn?
I'm not sure if I was quite there with Jeremy.
I have sold off on the team by now, and I think that's it. So, I mean, obviously my opinion still hasn't changed that the Packers weren't a good team. It was not a good team the Lions beat up on. But what do you remember what your reaction was at the time? Because you mentioned Lambeau being the house of horrors. And yeah, you beat them comfortably in Lambeau, but objectively, if we play that team on a neutral field, what are you saying about this win? Like resume, like as putting on a resume, I guess.
This was a game that the Lions had to win at this point in the season, right? Yes. Like there's no way they could have dropped to 3-5. Like Jeremy Reisman doesn't write that little blurb at the end. He doesn't write that, you know, sense of optimism that potentially could have still been there. You know, Minnesota looked good, but I don't know if they were necessarily the world beaters because they were dealing with their own like issues at quarterback and, you know, Sam Bradford, Case Keenum, you know, what's going
Dalvin
on.
Dalvin Cook, yeah.
Yeah, the Dalvin Cook injury. We didn't know that Minnesota's defense was just going to be on fire the entire year. But yeah, I mean, I think if you lose this game, all sense of optimism flies right out the window, especially if you put it in the context of what had happened in weeks past with the Steelers and the Saints game. But yeah, I mean, if it's on a neutral field, the Lions get the win. It's like, yep, that's what they should have done. They should have taken care of business. Agree or no?
I think so. This wasn't a good Packers team in any stretch of the imagination. This was just, for whatever reason, the Aaron Rodgers things just took everything out of them, and you just saw what a threadbare team it was without them. And yeah, I mean, they've got the stats to prove it. Once again, though, the great story is the ground game. The Lions had less rushing than Green Bay did. 64 on the day to the 78 from Green Bay.
And this was a tough one for Abdullah, too. Two fumbles in this game. One of them, which he lost.
Yeah, he was averaging less than like 2.5 yards, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy's favorite little stat, he had a long of 21 of 11. So,
Yeah, so 20, so essentially 20 carries for 37 yards.
Yeah, Theo Riddick, meanwhile, not that much better. And then you look down the depth chart, you don't see much else hope there. So I just
Theo Riddick had 5 carries for 11 yards, but he had a long of 14.
Yeah.
So he had four carries that went for negative 3 yards.
But on the plus side, we did see continuing Golden Tate and Marvin Jones both had simultaneously good games. Both of them went for over 100 yards passing. Jones had the 2 touchdowns, but Golden Tate was just as impressive when it came to production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Both big games out of them. Marvin Jones, that opening drive. There was a flag that got thrown on Daniels I think it was like an illegal hit, like a head-to-head contact with Travis Swanson, and that kept the drive going, set up that first Matthew Stafford to Marvin Jones, I think it was 25-yard touchdown pass. But yeah, it seemed like they were in control from start to finish, and it felt good. Like, this felt good to go in and win in Lambeau. I mean, the Lions had done this now 2 out of the past 3 years. So it felt good to get a win on the road, even though, did it feel cheap?
I mean, without Aaron Rodgers? How can it not without Aaron Rodgers, right? It feels like it's like you need this win. You hate them. You know they're going to beat them. So you've got to be opportunistic about it. But if you got to be opportunistic about it, that implies being cheap about it, I guess. I will say this, I mean, and yeah, I mean, the stats speak for themselves. You had, 2 fourth down stops, and I believe 3 3-and-outs that you force on Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers is on the field. That doesn't happen at all. So just the whole game changes. The whole outlook on this game changes. As you said, it was a game the Lions had to win. If Aaron Rodgers had been on the field, I would have said, yeah, you have to win this game after dropping to 3-4, but can you? This is now week 9 in the NFL, and we're looking at this Lions team, still not sure what's going to happen. Perfectly at 500, beat Green Bay when they should have beat Green Bay, and you've got just a cupcake schedule for the next couple of games with Cleveland and Chicago coming up before you have to take on Minnesota, Baltimore, and Tampa Bay. And I believe at that time, we were all penciling in like, okay, you can win those except for maybe Minnesota. Like, I know the Lions had just beat Minnesota in there. That's where it gets tricky, because you beat Minnesota on the road, but there's coming home to Ford Field.
Thanksgiving, all Thanksgiving. That stuff going in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at 4, maybe 5 wins coming up, maybe. And yeah, man, I don't know. You had to have this. You had to have this to stay in the hunt. And I think Jeremy was right in that if you just take care of business, you can be right back there. But as always, business doesn't happen the way you expect it to in the NFL. It just doesn't happen. You lose, you win comfortably in some games you're supposed to win. But if it gets close to coin tosses, or even in games where it's not supposed to be a coin toss, strange things happen, man. Strange things happen on the road. Strange things happen at home. Just it's one of those leagues where it's, maybe it's because we put so much emphasis on the single games because there's only 16 of them. But it's hard to just keep winning. Like, once again, we had people saying the Lions can run the table after Green Bay. And as we'll see, that's clearly not the case.
It is running the table your least favorite sports cliche there is?
I have some other ones that I really hate.
I think that might be a good list.
Ring counting is on there. Yeah, that would be a great list cast, actually.
Our least favorite sports cliches?
Yeah, I'm sure Jeremy would have momentum up there, like top 3. He hates momentum.
Momentum. The Lions, I wonder if Jeremy was here, if he would say whether or not the Lions had momentum heading in their favor after they won this game in Green Bay.
It's quite possible. We'll have to ask him next week when the Lions play Cleveland and we step back in the Wayback Machine. But for now, we're getting out. Can't keep doing that. I get winded when I do that. I'm just talking especially in so the much. Heat. Oh my god, it is so hot in here now. Whew.
We're almost done.
Yeah,
we have one last segment.
And you know what it is? It's the mailbag. That's yeah, right, baby. Folks. Mailbag. You guys have filled in up the mailbag at the last moment. Thank you. We will have your questions coming up next.
Mail time.
The mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
Mail time. Hashtag AskPOD. As always, get your questions in. Whoa, we've got summer questions. We've got Lions questions. We've got all sorts of cool stuff here to talk about. We would normally read reviews, but Jeremy's not here, and that's Jeremy's job. No one else is doing it.
And I'm decided. And we're all union here, so it's not my job.
We're a union? Who's our representative?
Braun Strowman.
That would be a really good union leader.
I think it would be, but I think actually our union rep would be Brock Lesnar, and he's just really hard to get a hold of.
I like that. All right, I've got food questions, drink questions, Lions question, and a Fortnite question. Where do you want to start?
I want to start on the beginning of the road to WrestleMania, so you take me down that.
All right, Bud Dog asking us, because it's July and it's hot as hell, which flavor of Gatorade is the best?
Ooh, this is a tough one. This is something really that we could also probably list cast sports drinks.
Oh my God, yes. Well, like just top five. I could probably do top five Gatorade flavors right now. Actually, you know what? Here, get me right here. Number five is Fruit Punch. Number four is Glacier Ice, I believe, is it? Is that the name of it?
Okay, yep. It is Glacier Ice. One.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Number three is, oh crap. Actually, Glacier Ice is three. Orange, like the orange tangerine one is four. Number okay, two fair enough. Is blue, number two is blue raspberry, the darker of the two blue flavors. And then number one is lemon lime, the original.
See, Chris, you're a man who shares quite a few things with me, one of them being your taste in Gatorade flavors, because number one and number two, both with a bullet, are cool blue and lemon cool. lime.
I think my personal flavor. Yeah, I think my personal favorite, though, is cool blue, but I really can't put it above lemon lime. That's like 1A right there. And then Glacier Frost is really good as well. But Cool Blue and Lemon Lime is just really hard to beat.
They had a lemonade flavor that was actually pretty good too.
Ooh.
I can't remember the last time I had it, but yeah, no one's lemon lime. I actually,
stuff, right?
I don't think so. No. It tastes like cough medicine.
I mean, that might be a plus to some people. I'm good without it, though. I like that fruit punch stuff a lot, but there's a lot of other better fruit punch flavors out there that you should just not be having Gatorade.
So somebody I used to play hockey with, his brother, David, drank nothing but fruit punch. He drank nothing but the fruit punch flavor of Gatorade an entire summer. And do you remember those commercials of Gatorade where, like, they were sweating, but they were sweating
the colors,
like, the beads of Gatorade?
Yes.
He legitimately had a red... Like, he always wore the same hat throughout the summer when we would hang out. We'd hang out for each other, like, days upon days. And he had, like, a red ring, like a sweat ring on his head. And I was like, that can't be real.
Oh, man. Oh. Just no. Football question coming up here from Constrictor14. Is the AFFL legit? It's the Flag Football League. We just had them in the notes today. Javid Best is playing. Yeah.
Is it legit? I don't know. Like, I was really big on the idea of the Big Three, the league that Ice Cube had started. And I'll be honest, I haven't watched almost any of it.
Yeah,
like, I thought it would find its like niche in, you know, the summer months where there is no basketball. But guess what? Like, the NBA offseason is entertaining enough in itself.
This is a bad year for it, too, with the World Cup and everything as well.
Right.
And yeah, you're right. The NBA offseason is just like, it's like Entertainment Tonight for men. It's just insane. I like the flag football thing, though. I haven't watched a lot. I don't have NFL Network right now in my cable package. or else I probably would, because you know me, I like all, and I annoy Jeremy with it, but I like all iterations of football. So I will watch AFFL. I will watch Canadian football. I will watch Japanese college football. I'll watch it. If it's out there, I'll try to watch it.
Good on you. Because, yeah. I mean, I'll watch clips on Twitter. I won't sit down and actually watch it.
Thing with me with TV a lot of times, too, is I put it on for background noise because it's usually in the same room as a computer. And I will just, like last night, I was working on job applications and I'm just keeping that on. I just have Amazon Prime playing in the background, playing like season two of Deep Space Nine. I just find videos to keep running in the background.
Fair enough.
What'd you say ooh about Deep Space Nine?
Yes.
I love Deep Space Nine.
Should we get into that or no?
Get into what? Deep Space Nine?
Deep Space Nine.
Probably my favorite Star Trek out there.
I don't do a whole lot of Star Trek, but I do remember watching Deep Space Nine. So
good crew, good cast for it all too. I was watching the pilot episode too, and remembering what a sleazeball the doctor was. I forget his name off the top, but like
yeah, I can't remember either.
Just a total scumbag hitting on all the women and acting like he's going to be like this frontier hero. He's so slimy, and I love it.
Good stuff.
Let's take a Lions question here before we jump into more food questions and summer questions. Justin/LionsSharks15 asking us, what do you think is the one weakest position that is keeping the Lions from going to the Super Bowl? Well, don't even need to get to the Super Bowl, just basically the even just getting to the playoffs. And I think we've got a similar question here from Cameron Bonk. I'll read both, and we're kind of giving a generic answer to them. Which player is most likely to take the jump into the next tier in their position group? So by way of merging these two, what do you think is the position group that has the most promise and the one that's just a dumpster fire and you're giving up on?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think it's... I can't do this. I was going to say it was the linebackers, but I still believe in Jared Davis.
For me, it's a line. Like, I love A'shaun, but there's no one else for me that I can trust on the defensive line.
I know. Like, a huge Carry Hyder guy. I don't know what he's going to be like coming back from an Achilles injury. Ezekiel Ansah, I want to hope that he's healthy. And if he is healthy, we know that he's, you know, capable of being one of the better, you know, edge defenders. But I don't know. It's tough. Like, am I supposed to put a ton of stock into Devin Kennard when I don't really know like what he'll look like in this offense?
And I get it. We're supposed to look at the tape and we're supposed to polish it up and tell you how great these guys are if you just watch, you know, 40 hours of their tape from college or from their previous teams. But I can't do that. I can't sell you that Kool-Aid. Not yet. Not before the recipe's out.
I'm really trying to back down from doing that. I think I often catch myself trying to do that. Like, well, you know, if we get the best version of this player, if we get the best version of that player, if we get the best, like how often does that ever happen?
Yeah, if the stars align in the house of Aquarius at the, in the age of Gemini, we will be just, you know, right, an eternal dynasty.
We'll be 19-0 by season's end.
I can't do that.
But yeah. Things don't work out like that. I don't know. The positions where I think the Lions would most need to improve, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to have two answers. I'm going to say linebacker and defensive line. But what about the second part to that question?
What holds them back? Or who's going to be the most improved?
Yeah, like who's going to take their jump into the next tier?
Honestly, wide receivers. I mean, we've been getting quite a bit of play on them, but I still think a lot of people sleep on this post Calvin Johnson era with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones. And if you get Kenny Golladay healthy too, like you're going to see some spectacular grabs from a few of these guys, I think.
That was initially my answer, so I'm going to give another answer, and I think mine's going to be the secondary.
Yeah,
I'm expecting big things from Tabor this year. I think that they clearly drafted him because they thought he was talented. They brought him along really slowly, But with Slay and Tavon Wilson coming back and Quandre Diggs, Glover Quinn, like hopefully Glover Quinn will have just another outstanding season and that'll finally put them on the map. But I think like this unit as a whole, I think that they have a lot of good things going for them in the right direction. So I'm going to say that the secondary takes a step up, because I don't think you would see the Lions secondary on anybody's like top 10 list.
Yeah, absolutely. Got two Fortnite questions. Are you ready?
I can't wait.
By the way, folks, join our Discord. It is in my profile on Twitter, Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. And Reno and Ryan here and Jeremy all play Fortnite. I still don't. I don't know. I just haven't gotten into it. I have bad experiences from the last. Well, last time we did this, you guys dragged me into Overwatch and I hated it.
You hated Overwatch?
I enjoyed playing the healer, but like I got tilted real bad some games. You were there for it when I would just get really, really mad because I would play Mercy and just get nuked every time I would come out. Nuked.
I haven't played Overwatch in at least 8 months.
There's a new hero coming. It's a wild hamster and a robot.
Sign me up. but that honestly might be enough for me to get up on my shelf and put it in my PlayStation. But
all right, let's get to these Fortnite questions, though.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, first one from Why Not the Lions. Where's your favorite place to drop in Fortnite, and how many wins do you have?
Truthfully, I think like our favorite spot to land is like Haunted Hills, like up in the northeast corner or northwest corner of the map. So like either like Haunted Hills or Junk Junction, and then kind of like make our way back around up through Anarchy Acres right up there in the north. I think that's where we like to land the most. When we're the most upset, we like to land in Tilted Towers and kind of just get out our frustration and all of our pent up animosity amongst one another because somebody did something wrong in the last game. Literally Tilted Towers. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Second question from CJ. Which would you rather have, to play Fortnite with Ninja or Lions NFC playoff conference game? DVR is broken.
Lions NFC playoff anything.
Fair enough.
I like playing Fortnite, but I don't know if I like playing Fortnite enough to say I'd really want to play Fortnite with a popular streamer. I don't know. Ninja's cool. He wears a Stafford jersey during
during
his streams, which is cool.
It's wonderful. All right, we got a few more questions here. Let's see here. We got a few regarding Jeremy now. RBQ Herzog asking us which restaurant in Detroit has the best mozzarella sticks.
I just don't. The mozzarella sticks thing has. All right. This isn't a rage corner, but I need to say a few things about the mozzarella sticks thing. Okay. First of all, like, if you like mozzarella sticks, that's fine. I have no problem with you liking mozzarella sticks. However, I will not tolerate people who say that mozzarella sticks belong on your appetizer platter above just about any other type of appetizer. Like, literally imagine anything else. I don't even care if it's like quesadilla. Like, if you're getting a quesadilla as an appetizer from a bar, that's gonna taste better than a mozzarella stick.
There's one thing I'll put below it, and that's fried pickles.
They're always like, nobody does a good job of frying pickles. I mean, like, in theory, fried pickles sound incredible, and I'm sure if they're done right. But if you're going to like Lone Star, or if you're going to like,
yeah, it's like ordering like a jalapeno popper. Just no one knows how to fry pickles or peppers or any kind of vegetable that isn't an onion.
No, they struggle with it. So yes,
that's why a lot of people fuck up okra too. Like, everyone, like, I love good fried okra, but so many people just make it as a slimy, disgusting grease ball. But if you get someone who can actually make like real fried okra, that is probably my favorite appetizer.
Yeah. Yeah. But
okay.
Mozzarella sticks. It's fine to like them. It's fine to like them. Just quit pushing your agenda on me.
Question from Bring Back Gym Shorts. I disagree with you. What will be the first Michigan tradition / specialty that Jeremy partakes in now that he's a resident again?
This is kind of a I don't know if this really counts because it's kind of like a Northville type thing, but we're gonna do trivia, Alex, Jeremy, and myself, and potentially Kyle Yost too. And I know that we want to get him in on it. We want to get anybody in on it that lives in Michigan, to be honest. Chris, when you come back, if you're ever back on a random Wednesday, we would love to go play trivia where we play trivia at.
Once my life stabilizes, man.
Can't wait. I can't wait for that to happen. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think Jeremy should partake in, Chris, when he gets
probably
back
getting Taco Bell at 9 o'clock in the afternoon? I mean, 9 o'clock at night.
Having a easily accessible Wendy's.
Going to McDonald's and ordering fresh fries with no salt and then asking for salt packets.
Oh, that sounds so good right now.
Let's see. Throwing out his wheel on a pothole. Front passenger side wheel. Just he's gonna screw up the shocks or something. I don't know. I don't know much about cars. We're not doing car talk.
Yeah, let's leave the car
complaining
talk
about
to the
complaining about the summer humidity.
Yes. Well, what about winter? I can't wait for Jeremy in the winter.
Oh my God, he's been living in LA for how many years now? He is going
to freeze. 7 years or whatever. He's going to be so upset.
Like a damn popsicle, because it's never that good snow that you could get in like Minnesota or New England. It's just the disgusting, awful lake effect slush.
Well, one person's trash is another person's treasure. That means snow days for me. So love that wet, nasty garbage snow. But I can't. You know what? Jeremy's going to have the least room to complain because his job doesn't require him to drive.
Yeah, he gets to do the same job he was doing out in LA, just in Michigan now.
Yeah, so don't complain about the snow, Jeremy. Just don't do that. Don't come back from California and be like, oh man, why'd I ever move back? Don't do that. I'm not going to tolerate it. I'll get really upset and slap.
He's also not allowed to send me pictures of the good Euros you guys have up there. LA is, that's the one thing lacking in LA food. There's a couple of good Greek places, but there's just not enough. Papa Cristo's in Koreatown, if you're ever in Los Angeles. Very good Euros, but not a lot of other places where I can get some good Euros. It's
what too a easy, crying actually. Shame.
Yep, pretty much. Speaking of food, Ryan Collins asking us, what is the essential summer food?
This is a good question. Do you have an answer, Chris? Like, is there a food during the summer that you can absolutely not go without having at least once?
Okay. So originally I was going to say I just have a drink in mind, but I think I do have some food. But I'll start you on drink. Summer shandies, absolutely. Need those. Beer plus lemonade, make your own.
Tasty.
Very tasty. Food. And I will count as a summer food, but just a big, hearty, cool, cold, chilled slice of watermelon.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah. Like you thought I was going to go or something. No, it's watermelon.
I kind of did. I kind of thought you were going to talk about something on a grill, but I totally family feuded you. You were like, watermelon. Good answer. Good answer. Good answer.
Yeah. What's your answer?
I would hate to co-opt your answer, but watermelon is just such a great summer food.
It's essential
refreshing, summer. It's refreshing, especially if it's sitting in the fridge and it's nice and crispy and cool.
It's been kept in a cooler with some ice as you're waiting at like outside a grill in a picnic. Slice
good,
it up
man.
Fresh right
it's
there.
Really good.
Tuck the seeds out if you can. Yeah.
Great. Great answer.
Whoa. Okay. I think we're about done with the questions. I'm looking around and seeing if we got anything else here. Do you have anything?
I have a question.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
What's the last movie you watched and did you enjoy it?
Last movie I watched. Okay. Does it have to be in a theater or what? Can I just
movie? Any movie.
Okay,
was the last movie you watched?
Yeah. On Amazon Prime, I watched Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Not familiar with it.
So Valerian itself, it's like a French comic book, and they adapted it to, it's a French graphic novel. They adapted it to a movie. It's a terrible movie. I was just laughing at just how bad it was. It's kind of a nadir. It's an unspoken nadir of comic book movies. Like, it's not as bad as some of these other superhero ones, but it's just funny because I'm fairly familiar with Valerian a little bit, and just how they changed some of the characters is so, like, they turned the woman whose name is escaping me right now off the top of my head because it is now like 85 degrees in this apartment without my AC.
Mm-hmm.
They changed her into like some ice queen who's like, and they changed, and the actor who they got for Valerian, who I'm going to look up real quick, and you're going to hear the clack of my keyboard. Yeah, Valerian City, 1,000 Planets. I just want to, I forget who the name, yeah, Dane DeHaan, they got him. If you look him up, he looks like a twink Keanu Reeves, is how I would describe him. And he sounds like Keanu Reeves too, but he's not supposed to act at all like Keanu Reeves. He's supposed to have a lot more, like, in the comics, he's supposed to be this, like, gung-ho soldier type. And it's just, it's such a weird look. It's beautiful. It's a very visually beautiful movie. And the problem with that is, like, yeah, that would have been a cool back in like the 2000s or something. But nowadays, everyone has, like, you know, godsend CGI. I would still recommend people watch it just because the base material kind of carries the movie itself. It's the French comics are apparently like really good. I only know about them through passing, but it's one of those movies that it's like, yeah, I wouldn't watch it again. Now, if you caught me tonight, I'm going to be watching the old Dune movie tonight, the 80s Dune movie. A lot of people have been talking about Dune again lately for whatever reason. And I barely remember that the Dune, the 1980s Dune, and I'm going to go back and watch it because I love Dune.
I have not seen Dune before.
It's a very screwy film because the books themselves are very, very screwy. I read the books when I was in high school and it messed me up. The books, Dune, the book by Frank Herbert, is some of the most incomprehensible science fiction you will have, but it is also probably the most creative. And people really struggle to get that out there now. What about you? What was the last movie you saw?
Yesterday, I got home from my vacation up north, which was me attending a wedding. But I got home, turned on Netflix, and I saw that The Departed was on there. And I watched The Departed with Walt.
With Marky Mark out there yelling a lot.
Are you a cop?
Are you a fucking cop? that's when Mark Wahlberg like got his foot back into films? Was that movie, or did he get a role before then? Was he doing Transformers before it Departed?
No way. And right. I think it wasn't until after that even that he got into might have been around the same time that he did Shooter.
No, Shooter was a couple of years after The Departed. But like, yeah, the first movie I remember that? Because I just remember that was the first movie I remember him in, like in modern times, was The Departed. And that was Martin Scorsese is just so good at that kind of thing. I think I talked a few podcasts ago when we got onto movies about how hard it is to get that many stars into the same room these days. And Martin Scorsese can do that because he had Martin Sheen, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jack Nicholson, Alec Baldwin, Brad Pitt. My God.
And Brad Pitt wasn't in this one.
Oh, no. Matt Damon. I always screw up Brad Pitt, Matt Damon. I always do that.
Well, it goes back to my theory on this is like the movie that has me always wondering when I say, hey, if Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio just like switch career paths, like would we have even noticed?
Probably not. I think less people would have like gotten hot for Damon as they did for DiCaprio.
I probably agree with that.
By the way, speaking of big time cast things, this might be a way for you to watch Valerian, just to go back a couple steps ago, but I completely forgot until now. Rihanna has a role in Valerian.
I think one of the last things I want to do is watch Rihanna act.
It's not good. It's not good at all.
That's one of the last things I want to be able to do. Going back to your point real quick about direct, you know, certain directors being able to assemble,
you know, like Scorsese these, can do that. Maybe Coen, the Coen brothers can kind of do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What have you seen the cast for Tarantino's new movie?
I have not. Tarantino is absolutely one of those guys. I didn't even know he was making a new movie.
Yeah. So he's making a Western new film
is it a Western, a crime, or World War II?
It's a crime drama thriller.
Of course.
Yep. So a TV actor and a stunt double embark on an odyssey to make a name for themselves in the film industry during the Charles Manson murders in 69. So it's kind of surrounded around the Manson murders, but listen to this cast. Margot Robbie, Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Dakota Fanning, James Marsden, Al Pacino, Kurt Russell, Burt Reynolds, Emile Hirsch. I mean, it just keeps on going on and on.
But, total turn off on late career Al Pacino. I'm out.
Ooh-ah.
Last question to you related to that. Over under, how many N-words are going to be said in this movie?
Especially in a a film with, I can't see any minorities in here. I think all these people are white.
Yeah, and you know Tarantino doesn't care about that. Like he's survived every backlash possible. He knows he can get away with it.
I don't even want to put a number on it because I know that it'll be wrong.
20 over and under. Over or under 20. 20 and a half.
Can it eat? I don't know how it could possibly be over. So I'm just going to take the under.
Someone might say it rapidly in one of those like dialogue segments where they get out like five probably at a time.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm looking forward to this movie, though. Can I at least say that?
Yeah, sure. That's a good note to end it on.
Okay. Go watch movies.
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I Am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSHEPARD. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I Am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you star side.